Hello and welcome to Volume 45, Number 1 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 3rd of January 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined for this 45th birthday edition by newsreader Margaret. Hang on, was it really 45 years ago that we did this for the first time?
Hello everybody from the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association for the Blind. Welcome to this, the first of our weekly talking newspapers, Grapevine. Yes, every week from now on you'll be receiving through your letterbox a cassette like this, which we hope you'll look forward to and enjoy.
Yes, some 2,200 editions with over 50,000 stories produced over the years since that first cassette hits the post office for delivery. As the saying goes, time flies when you're having fun. And I think that I speak for all Grapevine members, past and present, that we've enjoyed ourselves tremendously whilst creating your weekly news fix. 50, here we come! Right, to the task in hand in the news this week, potential weather problems, the ambulances and hospitals are struggling, and international issues at Potter's Bowls Tournament. All this coming your way during the next hour-ish, but first, the birthdays. Firstly, we must not forget Margaret Alcock, who we hope had a great day on Wednesday the 1st. Then, on to next Friday the 10th, with our best wishes to Ron Wurzel and Doreen Frith. All together now. Right, time for the first part of the news. Over to Margaret.
Hello, everyone. It's Margaret here again. And a very happy new year to all of you. Well, that's 2024 over and done with, and I hope 2025 will bring better news. So if you're sitting comfortably, I'll begin. Highest alert level. The East of England Ambulance Service has been forced to move to the highest alert level amid a surge in demand across the region. It came as the cold weather and New Year celebrations increased the already huge pressure on resources in the health service. Now clinicians are being made to prioritise those most in need, with other patients being told to make their own way to the hospital if they can, due to wait times. The move to work at Resource Escalation Action Plan, REAP Level 4, will see healthcare workers deployed with non-clinical ambulance drivers to maximise the number of vehicles hitting the road. This ensures that all clinicians are still available to respond to incoming calls, as they will not be behind the wheel. The decision comes as emergency calls rise to an unprecedented level, with increased pressure at hospitals, leading to longer waiting times for ambulances to hand over patients. Medical Director of the East of England Ambulance Service, Simon Walsh, said, "There is an outstanding level of pressure on the whole health system in the East of England. We have seen a huge spike in demand, driven by an increase in respiratory illness, which means many of our hospitals are at capacity and our ambulance crews are stretched to the limit. What I urge the public to do is to think very carefully about using 999. If you have a medical emergency and need us, we will get to you, but there may be a delay. During periods of high demand for our services, patients with urgent and immediately life-threatening conditions are our priority. We apologise in advance to anyone experiencing delays. Former Health Secretary Patricia Hewitt has been made a dame in the New Year's Honours List for her work to transform healthcare in Norfolk and Waveney. The former Labour MP is made a dame for her work as Chair of NHS Norfolk and Waveney Integrated Care Board and Deputy Chair of the Norfolk and Waveney Integrated Care Partnership. She said, "I'm deeply humbled and honoured to receive this award. Working to improve health and well-being, first as Health Secretary and now in the Norfolk and Waveney Integrated Care System, has been the greatest privilege of my life. I want to pay tribute to the thousands of outstanding individuals and organisations I've had the chance to work with, brilliant NHS and social care staff, community activists and volunteers, patients, carers and service users, inspiring clinical and professional leaders, as well as entrepreneurs and innovators across the public, private, community and social enterprise sectors. This award truly belongs to them all. And to my extraordinary colleagues in Norfolk and Waveney, I extend my heartfelt gratitude. Your dedication and collaboration continue to inspire me every day." Between 2005 and 2007, Dame Patricia was Health Secretary to Tony Blair's government. And more about the New Year's Honours. A woman who has spent nearly two decades helping police solve crimes through a network of CCTV cameras has been awarded the British Empire Medal, that's the BEM, in the New Year's Honours. Rona Benson, 76, is the lead volunteer at Galston CCTV, a system of 27 cameras covering the town's busy thoroughfares, residential areas and seafront. She has been awarded the BEM for services to policing and crime prevention. "I feel very honoured, very humble and very excited too," she said. "Nothing like this has ever happened to me before. I still can't believe it." Her journey with the service began 17 years ago when a police officer involved in establishing the network approached her to volunteer. At the time, Miss Benson was active in her local neighbourhood watch group and had long been interested in crime prevention. "It's such a big part of my life. It's my life's work now," she said. "I'm very passionate about it. I want to help and I want to give back to the town." Miss Benson, who has a background in teaching, moved to Galston in 1979 and immediately fell in love with the place. "This town has been very good to me. I wouldn't go anywhere else," she said. She oversees rotas for the 14 volunteers who operate the system in 3-hour shifts, assists with technical issues and is on call 24/7. Her role had included reviewing footage to assist police with investigations into burglaries, thefts, fraud, road traffic collisions and missing persons. One of the most notable cases she worked on was the search for Sophie Smith, the 20-year-old University of East Anglia student who went missing on Boxing Day in 2017. Miss Benson reviewed hours of CCTV footage during the search, including the last known image of Sophie captured at 3 a.m. as she ran toward the beach from her family home on Avondale Road. People smugglers made several attempts to smuggle migrants across the channel using a boat brought on the Norfolk boards. Freddie Lawrence, 57, and close associates Keith Bagent, 63, and Paul Gelia, 64, made repeated attempts to smuggle Vietnamese migrants from France on a boat called the Sorrel Light. National Crime Agency officers observed Lawrence buying the vessel from a Broads boatyard for £30,000 prior to the failed attempts during a 10-day period in August 2018. Bagent was then enlisted to travel from Folkestone to Norfolk to fetch it for him. but he ignored advice from the seller to transport it by road. Instead, the boat was skippered by sea to Dover by Lawrence and another associate, Ronald Scott. Lawrence, Bagent and Gelia are all due to be sentenced in the new year after being convicted of assisting unlawful immigration. Scott and two further associates, Toby Lake and Stephen Chapman, who was living in France and acted as the point of contact, were jailed for a total of 5 years, 6 months, after being prosecuted by French authorities. French police conducting surveillance near Wimereux, a coastal town between Calais and Boulogne-sur-Mer, had spotted the Sorrel light about 100 metres from the beach. They saw 12 people of Vietnamese origin arriving on foot at a car park in the town, who then split into several groups before gathering on the beach. Flashes of light were seen from the Sorrel light, with return signals coming from the migrants. NCA investigating officer Dave Rock said this was a completely reckless enterprise which, had it been successful, would have put migrants into grave danger given the condition of the vessels and the lack of experience of those trying to sail them. Lawrence and his associates were trying to navigate their way through one of the world's busiest shipping lanes, which was willful negligence on their part. They were perfectly happy to risk the lives of their human cargo for the sake of profit. Several car owners woke up on Boxing Day morning to find their cars had been vandalised. The incident happened sometime in the early hours of December the 26th, with people in Dorset Close in Great Yarmouth waking to find their cars had been damaged. Police were called just after 10:30 a.m. by a member of the public reporting that several vehicles parked outside their home had tyres punctured overnight. In total, 5 different cars had their tyres slashed. An investigation is currently underway, and anyone with information or footage regarding the event has been asked to contact Norfolk Constabulary. People in Norfolk told to care for friends. People were urged to look out for their vulnerable friends and neighbours while Norfolk was battered by 50 miles per hour winds on New Year's Day. The Met Office has issued a yellow weather warning for Norfolk and most of the UK, which will last from 12:15 a.m. until 3 p.m. on January the 1st. Norfolk County Council's Trading Standards team had shared a statement in light of the announcement. It said, "We are urging residents to check on friends and neighbours to ensure they stay safe. Before the high winds hit, we would encourage you to secure loose objects such as ladders, garden furniture or anything else that could break windows or damage property if winds are strong enough to move it. Also, close and secure all doors and windows. Once the storm has passed, make sure that any vulnerable neighbours or relatives are safe and help them make arrangements for any repairs." It added that rogue traders may take advantage of the extreme weather in the aftermath, using it to persuade people to hire them for jobs such as roof repairs. The advice is never to agree to have work done by a cold caller, invite a cold call inside your home, or pay a cold caller for work up front. Bradwell Barbershop Bid. A row over plans to open a barbershop in a quiet cul-de-sac will soon come to a head. The application, which will be aired next week at a council meeting, has pitted residents of Laburnum Close in Bradwell against their neighbour, Ross Goodwin, who wants to convert his garage into a one-chair hairdresser's. According to the proposal, the business would operate on an appointment-only basis with one customer visiting at a time. But the bid has sparked significant opposition from neighbours and local officials. The 3 borough councillors who represent Bradwell North Ward, Graham Plant, Carl Smith and Daniel Candon, said the proposal is inappropriate for a quiet residential cul-de-sac with existing parking pressures. Their concerns have been echoed by neighbours, with 12 of them signing a petition objecting to the plans. Some residents said that allowing a business to operate in the area could set a precedent, opening a can of worms for other residential properties to consider similar ventures. The plans have also received 3 letters of support, pointing out that traffic from sports events at nearby Mill Lane Field far exceeds any impact a barbershop might have. The proposal will be discussed by Great Yarmouth Borough Council's Development Management Committee on Wednesday, January the 8th. In a report prepared ahead of the meeting, planners have recommended that councillors approve the plans. They say the intensity of the use would be limited, with only a single customer at one time, and would operate on an appointment-only basis. The report states that any impact could be prevented by conditions limiting the opening hours, as well as ensuring that only a single customer visits the premises at a time, and ensuring there are at least 10-minute breaks between appointments. They also said that any increased on-street parking demand would be very minimal. Previously, Mr. Goodwin has said he would strive to maintain a low-impact operation with minimal disruption to the neighbourhood. And Bradwin, the news again. A crash outside a village primary school left a road blocked. The incident happened at 9:31 a.m. on Tuesday in Lord's Lane in Bradwell, near Hillside Primary School, when 2 vehicles collided. The road was blocked following the collision, but a police spokeswoman has confirmed that there were no injuries. The AA traffic map said that traffic was slow in the area, with both police and recovery teams at the scene. The road reopened after a short period. A toy shop that has traded in Great Yarmouth for 40 years is closing down. Kerrison's Toys on King Street will shut its doors for the last time on January the 4th, following a decline in footfall in the aftermath of the coronavirus pandemic. In a post on their Facebook page, the shop said, "Over the years we've had great memories from Darth Vader visiting and bringing most of Great Yarmouth to a standstill to Ghostbusters busting ghosts. We have been honoured to serve Great Yarmouth High Street with a proper toy shop, selling safe, quality toys at discounted prices all the time," they added. The news has prompted sadness among customers. One man said, "A lot of my Masters of the Universe toys came from there many moons ago. Definitely the end of an era." A woman commented, "The staff are lovely, and you could always rely on the quality of the products. A big loss for Great Yarmouth. The town centre isn't what it used to be." The toy shop, which has been on King Street since the 1980s, went up for auction in April following a notable decline in summer trade over the previous 3 years. At the time, Stephen Kerrison, who owns the Yarmouth branch and a store in Norwich, said he was looking into closing the Great Yarmouth store after a tough couple of years following the coronavirus pandemic. "We have battled away for 2 or 3 years since the pandemic, and the summer trade is not what it used to be," he said. "There have been good and bad times, but recent years have been very difficult. It's a sad time and we don't know what else to do." The King Street shop is having a closing down sale with 25% off everything except fireworks. Kerrison's also has a branch in Aylsham Road in Norwich, which has been trading for 65 years and will be staying open. Nearly 20,000 tonnes of fertiliser, which was part of a shipment that almost led to the evacuation of Great Yarmouth, has finally reached its destination. The load of ammonium nitrate, first carried into the Norfolk port by the damaged ship MV Ruby, has been taken to the Ivory Coast in West Africa. It brings to an end a saga which began more than 6 months ago, when the ship set off from Russia laden with the material, which can be explosive if it is contaminated. The Ruby suffered damage in a storm soon after setting off, prompting her captain to sail into Yarmouth for repairs. However, there it was discovered that around 300 tons of the cargo may have been contaminated by the ship's fuel oil, triggering a crisis as local officials became concerned it might blow up, flattening large parts of Yarmouth. While a potentially contaminated fertiliser was dumped at sea off the coast of the town, the rest of the chemical compound was transferred to another vessel, the Zimrida. This ship, flying under the Barbados flag, then transported the fertiliser to Abidjan, the Ivory Coast's largest city, where it has now arrived after a 15-day voyage. The ship's stay in Norfolk and the decision to dump some of its cargo in the sea remains the subject of huge scrutiny and criticism. It has emerged that at one stage, officials were on the verge of ordering the evacuation of Yarmouth, while a no-fly zone was imposed over the town. Before she arrived in Norfolk, the Maltese-flagged vessel had reportedly been refused permission to enter Lithuanian and Swedish waters. Officials were said to be concerned the stricken ship, with her potentially explosive cargo, might even be a Trojan horse, designed to be used as a method of hybrid warfare by Russia to damage or threaten a European port. The amount of fertiliser on board was more than seven times the amount which devastated Beirut in an explosion in 2020. Rupert Lowe, the Yarmouth MP, believes the handling of the crisis was a scandal. He believes the UK agencies ultimately overreacted and has questioned the wisdom of dumping some of the cargo at sea. He has called for a parliamentary inquiry, but this has been rebuffed by the Transport Minister, Mike Kane, who believes his department handled the situation safely and appropriately. The Ruby itself has sailed to Tyneside for repairs.
More news in just a while, but first, something which we don't normally do, which is play requests. But as it's that time of year, let's play this at Margaret's suggestion.
Thank you.
Abba, through whom we send our best wishes to all listeners. Right, the second part of the news is upon us.
A new Great Yarmouth mural. I always want to say Muriel after that character in Coronation Street. Sorry, a new Great Yarmouth mural. A stunning new mural, celebrating a coastal artist's contribution to his hometown's cultural tapestry, has been completed on the 5th anniversary of his death. The mural, titled Keep a Bright Light, honours the late Ernie Childs, a renowned artist from Great Yarmouth. Painted by Mark Tanti, also known as Demographics, the mural is located in the Blackfriars car park, close to Great Yarmouth Potteries, which Mr. Childs ran with his wife, Karen. The artwork is part of the Represent Project's Community Champions Street Gallery Walls, an art trail that celebrates local heroes who have positively impacted the town and pays tribute to Mr. Childs' creative legacy and community spirit. The mural took 15 days to complete and was funded by the National Lottery, ITV and the Sunday Mail. Mr. Childs, who died in 2019, was well known for running the potteries on Blackfriars Road with his wife Karen. In 1981, the couple transformed the former herring curing works into a quirky hub for maritime-themed art and pottery, and it remained a cherished attraction until its closure in 2016. Mr. Childs remained active in the local art scene and wider town community, hosting classes and sharing the town's colourful history through his crafts, often inspired by tales told by his seafaring uncles in The Rose. Mrs. Childs said, "We are truly humbled and deeply honoured by the completion of this incredible mural. Ernie had always said he was made in Great Yarmouth, and this artwork, perfectly placed where he lived and worked, captures that sentiment beautifully. We know he would be so proud to see this representation of his life and legacy." The Represent Project will release a short documentary about Mr. Child's life to accompany the mural in January. A U-turn on Israeli ban. Israeli players will be permitted to compete in Norfolk's biggest bowls contest after a U-turn by organisers who had banned them amid pressure from pro-Palestinian groups. Officials from World Bowls Tour have revoked the ban, which would have stopped three bowlers from Israel taking part in next week's World Indoor Championships at Potter's Resorts in Hopton-on-Sea. The tournament organisers had withdrawn an invitation to bowlers Daniel Alamin, Amnon Amar and Itai Rigby after pressure from pro-Palestinian campaigners, including the Norfolk Palestine Solidarity Campaign and Show Israeli Genocide the Red Card. These campaigners, who encouraged more than 1,500 people to email their opposition to the Israeli bowlers' participation as the war in Gaza continues, had said the bowlers belonged to the apartheid and genocidal state. World Bowls Tour had said they had made the difficult decision to withdraw the invitation in the light of a significant escalation in related political concerns. But on New Year's Eve, and after criticism and accusations of anti-Semitism from MPs, certain lords and the Board of Deputies of British Jews, World Bowls Tour announced its U-turn. The tournament organisers said the Israeli bowlers would be allowed to compete after significant additional security measures had been put in place for the Hopton competition. In a statement they said, "The World Bowls Tour, in conjunction with their event partners, is delighted to advise that significant additional security measures have been put in place for the forthcoming World Indoor Bowls Championships. This means that we will now be able to welcome the competitors Daniel Alamin in the World Open Singles and Amnon Amar and Itai Rigby in the World Open Pairs. The WBT acknowledges that this has been a difficult time for all involved, and we are pleased that we have been able to achieve an outcome that includes players from all supporting countries. The decision was condemned as regrettable by Show Israeli Genocide the Red Card. The Scotland-based group said WBT have shown they have no moral fibre by reversing their decision to withdraw the invitation to three Israeli bowlers. We are extremely disappointed in their rejection of the Gleneagles Agreement and ICJ, International Court of Justice, findings. We reject all claims that isolating Israeli competitors is discriminatory. However, we stand by our fight against the normalisation of apartheid and genocide through sports participation. Our fight continues. Reform UK MP Rupert Lowe, whose Great Yarmouth constituency includes Hopton-on-Sea, said the band's revocation was fantastic news to finish the year. He said, "The Israeli team will be welcomed in Great Yarmouth, and I wish them well for the event. The World Bowls Tour have made the right decision. I thank them for that and their apology to the individuals involved." The World Indoor Championships tournament at Potter's Resort for the 27th year starts on Friday, January the 10th and continues until Sunday, January the 26th. The war in Gaza is now entering its 15th month, having started in October 2023, when Hamas-led militants attacked southern Israel, killing some 1,200 people and abducting around 250. Israel's air and ground offensive has killed more than 45,000 Palestinians, according to Gaza's health ministry. It says women and children make up more than half the fatalities. The Israeli military says it only targets militants and blames Hamas for civilian deaths because its fighters operate in dense residential areas. It says it has killed 17,000 militants without providing evidence. The war has caused widespread destruction and displaced some 90% of Gaza's population of 2.3 million, many of them multiple times. American and Arab mediators have spent nearly a year trying to broker a ceasefire and hostage release, but those efforts have repeatedly stalled as Hamas demands a lasting ceasefire and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu vows to keep fighting until total victory over the militants. Piles of half-nibbled party snacks and festive nibbles will be crammed in overflowing bins across the county around now, following a few weeks often marked by excess. Food waste can cause as much damage to the environment as single-use plastic and is a major contributor to climate change, with food recycling doing much to mitigate these issues. Yet council leaders in Norfolk are already kicking up a stink about government plans to introduce new food recycling rules, amid fears it will place more burden on already slim finances. The government intends to make it mandatory for authorities to begin collecting food scraps for recycling on a weekly basis by 2026. This will be a part of its war on waste, which will usher in a raft of reforms to bin collections. But so far, the amount of money offered by the Department of Environmental and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, falls far short of what is needed to make this work, with some estimates suggesting councils will be left having to find a £1.3 million to £1.6 million to cover the costs. It has left senior councillors criticising the government for penny-pinching, and officers and members wondering how they will afford to introduce the new system. Some Norfolk councils already deliver a food recycling service, which involves collecting vegetable peelings, leftover food and other organic waste. This is then sent to anaerobic digestion facilities that create electricity. Directing more food waste to these plants will generate more sustainable energy to power homes and businesses and cut down on the more than 18 million tonnes of greenhouse gas emissions currently associated with food waste, according to DEFRA. This will ensure the most unpleasant waste is dealt with quickly and reliable, said a DEFRA spokesman. However, food waste recycling is not yet offered to North Norfolk District Council, Great Yarmouth Borough Council, Breckland Council and South Norfolk Council. The government has offered £295 million for councils to introduce food waste collection, which will cover the costs of purchasing food waste caddies for households and vehicles to collect the scraps of food. But calculations by regional councils show the funding is less than what it will likely need to pay to introduce this. NNDC has estimated it will face a £1.3 million shortfall, while there will also be long-term running costs, which are not covered by councils, such as staffing and fuel to power the new vehicles. The new measures come in at a time when many district councils are facing big deficits in their funding. GYBC has warned it needs to make savings to plug a £2.2 million gap next year, while NNDC has said it has a £1.8 million shortfall. SNC also predicts a growing gap of funds, which could reach £1.8 million in 5 years' time. While the exact details of the scheme and its financing are yet to be finalised, it has left leaders worried about the challenges they face to bring it in. Paul Wells, Cabinet Member for Environment and Waste at GYBC, said, "While fully supportive of the goal of introducing food waste collections, I'm extremely concerned that it appears the government plans to penny pinch and will not give councils the resources they require to actually deliver the service. These plans require considerable upfront and ongoing expenditure, and it appears that local taxpayers will be left covering the gap created by the government. It's not unreasonable to ask the government to cover the bill they are imposing on local councils." He estimates GYBC will need 15 additional staff to provide the service, which will be a significant cost to the council. Tim Adams, leader of NNDC, believes the food waste collection will increase carbon emissions due to the vehicles required. He also believes there will not be enough plastic polymer available to create the new bins and food waste caddies needed. He said, "Central government has not understood the cost properly. There is loads of work to do, but it's proving there is a lot to consider for rural councils, as we will have more miles to cover than urban areas." Mr. Adams also believes plastic film recycling by councils, planned for introduction in 2027, will face similar hurdles. "There is a lot of volatility in the recycling market. There is no value in plastic film, so whether that goes ahead, we will see," he said. Keith Kiddy, Cabinet Member for Environment at South Norfolk Council, warned the scheme will require spending a huge amount of money and estimates annual operating costs will be between £1.3 million and £1.5 million. He said, "Depending on the final scheme introduced, it's estimated that SNC may face a capital shortfall of £500,000. A spokesman for DEFRA said it is reviewing the funding it will offer, which may also include provision for ongoing service costs. It's a 19th century building that once provided a haven for shipwrecked sailors. But under new plans, Maritime House in Great Yarmouth could be transformed into a mixed-use development, including a cafe and residential apartments. The listed building on Marine Parade is a relic of the town's seafaring heyday and has been used more recently as a museum and a tourist information centre until it closed in 2020. The latest proposal for the property would see it transformed into a new venue, also including office space and 5 flats on the upper floors. According to the planning application, the revamp would maintain the building's connection with its nautical past through a themed concept that recognises its rich history. The future of the property will be discussed on Wednesday, January the 8th, by members of Great Yarmouth Borough Council's Development Management Committee. In a report prepared ahead of the meeting, planners are recommending the committee approves the application. If the project gets the go-ahead, the revamp would be carried out by Kenzoco Properties, a Norfolk-based firm that specialises in renovation work. The Borough Council bought Maritime House on the market for £250,000 in February 2024, with the authority calling the 3-storey property surplus to requirements. The council had previously investigated converting the upper floors into flats, but that endeavour was deemed too expensive. Maritime House was built as the British and foreign sailors' home and refuge for the shipwrecked in 1860. According to the plans, the ground floor is already set up to successfully accommodate a cafe use with minimal charges. The RNLI would also help the project, with a charity set to benefit from fundraising events at the site. There have been no objections to the application. Over the course of 100 years, thousands of sailors passed through the home, with 1,400 staying there during the Second World War. The sailors' home closed in 1965, as advances in maritime safety reduced the need. From 1967, the building was used as a maritime museum. After it closed in 2002, the museum's buried collection of 5,000 objects was moved to the Time and Tide Museum on Blackfriars Road. After its life as a museum, Maritime House became home to the Great Yarmouth Tourist Authority until 2018 and the Tourist Information Centre until 2020. The building has become the focus of debate in recent years due to the significant costs it posed to the council, £42,769 per year in maintenance and other costs.
What's another year to someone who's lost getting used to being alone. I've been crying such a long time with such a lot of pain in every
Irish, if I remember correctly, Johnny Logan, and a number one from 1980. What's Another Year? Not the happiest song of the year, I have to say. Ho-hum, back to the news to get you completely up to date for this week.
And another story about the ambulance service. The East of England Ambulance Service, EEAS, has issued an urgent plea as it grapples with soaring demand across the region. The plea was posted on social media at 6 p.m. on Wednesday evening and read, "We are experiencing high levels of demand across the east of England. Only call 999 for life-threatening emergencies." The EEAS urged that people avoid calling 999 or 111 for an estimated arrival times and to only call back if a patient's condition worsens or they no longer need help. They also suggested using NHS 111 online. It comes as the service moved to its highest alert level yesterday, as cold weather and the New Year celebrations add immense pressure to already stretched resources. Now, clinicians are being made to prioritise those most in need, with other patients being told to make their own way to the hospital if they can, due to wait times. The move to work at Resource Escalation Action Plan, REAP, Level 4, will see healthcare workers deployed with non-clinical ambulance drivers to maximise the number of vehicles hitting the road. Medical Director of the East of England Ambulance Service, Simon Walsh, said, "This is an outstanding level of pressure on the whole health system in the east of England. We've seen a huge spike in demand, driven by an increase in respiratory illness, which means many of our hospitals are at capacity, and our ambulance crews are stretched to the limit. What I urge the public to do is to think very carefully about using 999. If you have a medical emergency and need us, we will get to you, but there may be a delay. During periods of high demand for our services, patients with urgent and immediately life-threatening conditions are our priority." A man has moved closer to his dream of building a house on his parents' land. Mark Parker is seeking outline planning permission to construct a self-built house on a garden plot at Forestry Cottage on New Road in Fritton. Plans say the house would allow him to live close to his grandmother, who resides in a property attached to Forestry Cottage, allowing him to support her independence in her later years. A report prepared for Great Yarmouth Borough Council recommends approving the application. Planners said this was a sustainable location for self-build development, and they noted the site's proximity to the existing settlement and infrastructure. Fritton with St Olave's Parish Council raised no objections, but stressed the need to ensure access for emergency vehicles in the driveway design. This is Mr Parker's second application after a previous refusal, which he appealed. While the planning inspectorate dismissed the appeal, they deemed the development acceptable in principle. Oh, and this is a bit grim. I don't like this. Heavy snow in parts of Norfolk possible. Heavy snow could lead to travel disruption and power cuts in parts of Norfolk over the weekend, as a yellow weather warning is issued. The weather warning for snow will be in force across the western half of the county between 12 p.m. on Saturday, January 4th, until 9 a.m. on Monday, January 6th. the Met Office warned of possible travel delays on roads, with some stranded vehicles and passengers, along with delayed or cancelled rail and air travel. There may be a risk of power cuts and other services, such as mobile phone coverage, could also be affected. The forecaster also advised that some rural communities may become cut off by the snow, and people should stay prepared for such an event. A spokesman for the Met Office said, "Outbreaks of rain spreading northeastwards late on Saturday and overnight into Sunday will likely be preceded by a spell of snow on its northern flank. While there is a fair bit of uncertainty as to how far north this may spread and how long any snow will last, significant accumulations of snow are possible, especially, but not exclusively, on higher ground. Currently, parts of the Midlands, Wales and northern England are most at risk of disruption, where 5 centimetres or more could accumulate fairly widely, with perhaps as much as 20 to 30 centimetres over high ground of Wales and or the Pennines. This, accompanied by strengthening winds, may lead to drifting of lying snow. In addition, as milder air attempts to move northwards into southern and central areas, snow may turn to a spell of freezing rain for a time, adding to the risk of ice. If milder air is able to spread more bodily northwards, any snow in southern parts of the warning area may be relatively short-lived before turning to rain." A man was evacuated from a Norwegian supply ship during gale force winds after suffering a medical emergency. The RNLI Great Yarmouth and Gorleston all-weather lifeboat was dispatched by Humber Coast Guard at 5:17 a.m. on January the 1st to carry out the medical evacuation from the ship, which was located 10 miles east off the Great Yarmouth coast. The operation unfolded under gale force 8 winds, with gusts reaching gale force 9 and very poor visibility. Despite the adverse weather, the lifeboat crew navigated the lifeboat at top speed to the provider, the ship carrying the casualty. Upon arrival, the provider repositioned to provide a lee, offering some shelter from the weather for the lifeboat. Coxswain Andy Mason directed the lifeboat safely alongside the supply ship, enabling the casualty to be transferred into the care of second coxswain and paramedic Rod Wells. With the patient aboard, the lifeboat Samabita returned to Great Yarmouth, where an ambulance crew was waiting to take over. The spokesperson praised the crew's skill and professionalism in executing the complex rescue under extreme conditions, emphasising the vital role of lifeboat teams in maritime safety. And an ongoing story about Hemsby and coastal erosion. In the last decade, more than 40 homes and coastal roads have been lost to the North Sea at Hemsby. It was over a year ago when 5 homes along the cliff tops in the village were demolished after a storm had battered the coast, leaving the properties on the brink of destruction. Remarkably, 12 months on and no more homes have been lost. But since the 1970s, some 300 metres of coastline are believed to have been lost to the North Sea, and some 10 metres in the last year alone. But concerns among those living and working in Hemsby are more heightened than ever, as locals notice the sea creeping closer and continue to live with the impact of erosion. Just last week, the gap, the main entrance and access point to the sandy shores, was closed after high tides washed the ramp away. The Hemsby lifeboat crew, manned by a dedicated team of volunteers, were left unable to launch their boat and out of service. And ultimately, despite calls to the government for sea defences, it is the lifeboat team who are left to carry out repairs and fixes following the latest bouts of erosion. The lifeboat has recently used its digger to drag washed away sand back onto the beach and manually put it in place to recreate the access point to the beach. but the volunteer crew fears it's just a matter of time until their lifeboat station, about 10 metres beyond the access point to the beach, will be washed away. Chris Batten from Hemsby Lifeboat, gesturing towards the beach that he and his colleagues had battled to reopen after the recent high tide surge, said, "This is the only entrance point for the whole beach. The economy depends on visitors coming to the village, who mostly all want to be able to get to the beach at some point, and this is the only safe access point to the beach. But in reality, it is an injury waiting to happen, but we do our best to supervise it and ensure it's operational at all times. But of course, our primary function is to continue to save lives at sea. But since we are here, we want to keep the beach open for the village. If we don't do it, nobody will do it. But despite what is going on with erosion, we are still increasing our capabilities as a service." As Hemsby braces itself to face another year of erosion, residents living along the Marham's cliffs have shared their thoughts. "In 2013, there were more than two rows of homes along the cliffs which faced the sea. These have all now been lost to the sea. Evidence of the road that was destroyed last year still remains, and cracks are visible. People along here just do not know how the situation will improve, or if it will." Pascal Rose, a former councillor who has lived in her home on the Marhams for 3 years and has lived in the Hemsby area for 42 years, said the village has been neglected over sea defences by the government. "I just wish that someone would do something about this, because it's scary. The disaster happened over a year ago and it has been going on for 15 years. Why are we being missed out? It's not fair, and we feel neglected in this situation. Scrapby, which is just a mile down the coast, has excellent sea defences, and there is nothing there at all. Whereas everything is here in Hemsby, shops, amusements, pubs, restaurants, holiday parks, and above all, a great community, which is being threatened. The revenue from Hemsby is £88 million a year, so why isn't the place being protected? It's heartbreaking." Another resident who wished to remain unnamed said, "Every person who has been made homeless then needs the council to find them a home, and they are having to shell out for them. This money could have been spent on protecting the shores, and that would have benefited the village and helped tourism and people visiting, which it depends on for many people's livings." Another man who has lived on the Marhams for more than a decade added, "If the village continues to be hit by erosion, I think it might be past saving now. Then I am worried about what might happen to our tourist resorts here. If the chalets remain vacant and people don't come here, then who will stick in there? What will happen? The village could lose its identity and spiral into Norfolk's very own Jaywick. Hemsby is reported to generate an annual income of £88 million, with the main boom generated in the summer months, as holidaymakers flock to the village to enjoy all it has to offer. But concerns are rife in the village about what the future looks like amid the erosion crisis." Sue Henney, who runs the King's Head pub with her husband Andy, fears how the increasing erosion will impact the future of the village. She adds that while her pub is well supported by locals, her own home is also facing the perils of erosion. "It's appalling and disgusting that nobody is helping. We feel that people in high places don't care. We feel that the erosion won't just affect our house, but it will be our business too, as the rapid erosion will stop people coming. The access road worries me. We feel trapped in Fakes Road, as we used to walk all along the old road, and now we only have the mud path. There is one small stretch of about 20 metres, which is covered by rocks to protect the cliffs. The cliff behind that remains largely protected. However, a gap in the cliff has been created where the unprotected sections of the coast have been withered away. People in the village argue that homes would not have needed demolishing had the rock groins been placed the whole way along the coast. Simon Measures for the action group Save Hemsby Coastline said, "We've been fighting for the last 11 years for action to be taken to protect the village. We have petitions to Downing Street and met with four different environment secretaries, and we are still waiting. It's at the point now where every high tide there is damage. One or more storms we fear will create in more homes being lost. All we are waiting for is a change to the funding criteria." The new MP for the area, Rupert Lowe, has been battling for the Environment Secretary to reconsider arranging for Hemsby to get urgent funding since he was elected in July. He has already donated a large part of one of his MP salaries to the Hemsby lifeboat, recognising that the crew are on the front line of the erosion, and has announced the lifeboat will be the recipient of December's salary. Mr. Lowe said, "This month's salary donation will go to the Hemsby lifeboat in order to help them mitigate the damage caused by coastal erosion. I am hopeful it can reduce the damage until the Labour government can get its act together and provide the wider support that is necessary. The funds will go to a secure container for life-saving equipment and ongoing efforts to maintain safe access to the beach. I understand that the people of Hemsby are sick of words. I'm doing my very best to deliver action." It will be the sixth monthly salary that Mr. Lowe has donated. Mr. Lowe also previously donated his salary to Great Yarmouth Football Club, Hemsby Lifeboat, the Pathway Cafe and Support Centre, YANA, that's You Are Never Alone, and Heart to Heart. Great Yarmouth Borough Council says it has sought and secured planning permission for a 1.3-kilometre rock berm that would potentially provide some defence for a stretch of the dunes in Hemsby if funding is found for it. In March 2023, the council secured emergency government funding to provide a temporary 100-metre rock berm at Hemsby. Almost 2,000 tonnes of granite was installed in an attempt to protect dunes and slow down erosion. More than 100 people attended a parish council meeting over concerns about plans to build 60 houses in Broads Village. The proposed development is part of the North Norfolk District Council, NNDC, local plan and would see the homes built on land between School Road and Norwich Road in Ludham. The council has said the site is suitable for housing, but residents of the neighbouring Willow Way development have expressed concerns about the impact of more housing on a creaky sewage system. According to the minutes of the parish council meeting, the main issue was very poor drainage and raw sewage, which appears regularly. One resident of Willow Way on the Ludham Village Community Facebook page said he was fed up with the drain outside his house running raw sewage into the ditch and his toilet overflowing during heavy rain. Villagers also brought up the lack of supporting infrastructure, including a doctor's surgery which is overwhelmed already, and a school which might find it difficult to manage a large influx of additional families. The parish council agreed it is generally in favour of additional properties in the village, but that concerns around the site itself require further exploration and careful consideration by NNDC. According to the local plan, Anglian Water has said that enhancements to the foul sewerage network may be required before development can proceed. In 2021, NNDC approved plans for 12 houses to be built on the site despite concerns about flooding. The council is under pressure to get its new local plan, which sets out the location of where new development can take place, approved by government officials. It follows the Planning Inspectorate, the department that presides over planning matters, telling the authority it needs to accommodate for an extra 1,500 homes in order to meet increased targets for house building. Thank you.
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Your newsreader next week will be Alison. So, we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us here at Grapevine, stay safe and well, have a very happy new year, and bye for now.